And of course, that theme is for that one thing. That means you're tuning into the Community Living Show here on the National Campus and Radio Association networks. That is the NCRA networks across Canada and across British Columbia. And we're on two networks on CITR 101.9 FM and streaming online at CITR.ca. And of course, we're on Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, and also online at cooperio.org. We'd also like to thank the First Nations people from the Coast Salish territories, from Musqueam to Squamish to Tsleil-Waututh. Thank you very much for broadcasting our stories and our documentaries. I'm Kelly Rayburn. Michael is on the assignment that I will be playing for you in just a few minutes. He'll be talking to Christine Amela Hayes, and I will get it set up for the interview right now. So you're going to be listening to Michael Rubin talking to Christina Amela Hayes on the Community Living Show. So enjoy.
Joining us today, we have Christine Amela Hayes. And Christine is an emotional freedom practitioner, and she's been doing this since 2003 and has advanced her skills since then, and has helped people around the world with their emotional needs. So, good afternoon, Christine.
Hello, Michael.
So, what is a emotional freedom practitioner exactly?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question. So emotional freedom therapy or technique was first discovered, or I should say brought into the sort of 21st century by a guy called Gary Craig, who was actually an engineer. And when he retired, he decided he wanted to do something completely different, and he discovered that there was something that was speechless. So this is okay, hang on a second, because this is going out on air, so I have to start again. So Gary Craig came up with something called the emotional freedom technique. And he's been teaching that for quite a long time. And I have actually worked with him and attended seminars with him. But basically, it works on the principle of acupuncture. And we're tapping on various points of the body at the same time as talking to release emotional issues, you might say. So it can be anger, it can be sorrow, grief, it can be fear, and all of these emotions are kept, it's thought that they are kept in the body. And so by using this technique, we can actually help people who have serious issues, such as fear of flying, or, you know, fear of water, fear of spiders, says she, who was spider hunting today. And other emotional difficulties that keep them or prevent them from living an active and full life.
Okay. All right. So you help people with phobias and things like that also?
Yes. People with phobias. And, there's been quite a lot of documented evidence. Mm-hmm. They have done EFT in an airplane with people who were terrified. And one of those people was Whoopi Goldberg. And there is actually a YouTube video of her and EFT. Yeah. And it really does help you to... But it's almost you can forget about it, right? It's like... We keep working on it until eventually we get to the point where you can look at the spider and not freak out, or the snake, or get on an airplane and actually fly.
Rats.
Okay, yeah. Well, I haven't done that one, but it's definitely those things.
Just saying.
Because people are. Whether it's rational or irrational, it doesn't matter. It's what we've learned as a response.
Okay.
Right?
Okay, that kind of makes sense. So, we had this kind of mapped out. We're going to say the who benefits and everything, and you actually got into the who benefits already. How exactly does it work? I mean, do you touch pressure points? Or
there are different people working different ways, and you can work with the person and you can do the tapping for them. Mm-hmm. Myself, I prefer to do it, I tap and they follow along. And so it's, you're tapping on certain points on the body, so it starts off with the hand in the karate chop area or the side of the palm, and then we move to the head and we do certain points around the head. So it's top of the eye, side of the eye, under the nose, under the chin, mm-hmm. and collarbone, and under the arm. And there are, as I say, there are different practitioners that work on different points because they believe that there are, you know, there's more better results. But those are the ones that I use, and it works pretty well. And it's very easy to learn.
Well, I understand. I've understood the principles behind mm-hmm. the points because they're this is probably the wrong word. They're like chakras.
They're meridians, actually.
Meridians. Yes. That's the word I was looking for. And I know that they're supposed to be energy points, and
correct.
If you can tap them,
yes.
you can move the energy.
Yes.
Or release energy,
yes.
whichever the
yeah.
person
so we are working
is, right?
on the same system as the an acupuncture.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can see, sometimes you see those little dolls that the acupuncture people have, and they've got all these little tiny points that they can put the needle in. So we're working just on much smaller, and we're using, and we have, and they've seen that you get way better results if you actually speak out loud. So the body's listening. Our intellectual or emotional self is listening to everything we say.
Oh, that's pretty interesting too. So the result is dimmed if you don't speak out.
Well,
so did you get your body experiences the whole thing, or what?
Yeah. Now again, I'm going to contradict myself because I know that if you're in a situation where it's not possible to speak, and there are certain points that you can use, and people have actually even we're getting into advanced techniques here, but they've actually sat there and imagined that they could tap on those points and still had success. Now that really is taking it a step further.
Yeah, that's that one's out there,
yeah,
right? And
yes.
Like, wow.
And Gary Craig, who is he's retired now, but he actually has taken it a step further too, because he actually is teaching people how to do the technique, but without doing it. So in other words, he imagines that he's doing it, and it still works.
Hmm.
I haven't gone there yet with myself.
That's saying something pretty amazing about the our body, our mind, and our spirit. Wow, that's... Yeah, you made me speechless.
And that's hard. Right?
Yeah, that's really hard. So how did you get started with all this?
Ah, yes. Well, that's an interesting question. Up until 2003, I was a hotel manager, and I worked for Hyatt and Holiday Inns and some rather big and very well-known hotels around the world. But I was mostly in London, and I decided that I didn't want to do it anymore, and I took myself to New Zealand to experience something called a mystery school. So I was learning more about the techniques of spiritual healing and other wonderful, different, you might say, healing practices. And I had an apartment in London that I decided I would rent out, which had to pay for me to do what I was doing. So when I left, I hadn't got anybody in it, and I was panicking. And about a week into my trip, I was really panicking. And a friend said to me, I can help you with that. We'll do some EFT. So she did this EFT with me, and one of the words I can still hear in my mind, she said, the money's there, we just haven't seen it yet. And the very next day I went down, and there was the money in my bank.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all perfect. So I was so taken aback by this that when I went on the rest of my trip, and I was in Australia, and I was on a boat, and it was rough seas and everybody was being seasick, I started to think, how did she do that? And so I started tapping and I didn't get seasick. And so when I got back to England after my trip, I thought, I'm going to do the course. So I went and took the course on how to do EFT as a practitioner. And I've never looked back, because truly I have really seen for myself how amazing EFT is and what it can do for you just on a daily basis.
Oh. That's...
yeah.
We'll have to go through that together.
Yes, we will.
And fill our bank accounts again.
That's cool. Yeah.
So, it's you're a brave person. You just decided to pack up your job and go to New Zealand on a trip.
I haven't actually gone back. I've been back for visits, but mm-hmm. I jumped off the cliff and I found my way to Canada quite by accident. I seriously didn't set out to come here, but come here I did. And I haven't looked back.
Wow. That is pretty amazing. Like I said, you're a brave person.
Thank you very much.
Most people can't seem to figure out how to, if they jump off the cliff, they smack bottom because they couldn't figure out how to build their wings along the way. And here's a prime example that can be done, right?
You see, and that's the other thing about the EFT. I swear to God, I have tapped. It's a wonder I haven't got bruises all around my eyes and, you know, on my hands, because there have been challenges. It's not like it's a straightforward journey. My journey is the same as anybody else's. But this is what I love about EFT, is that it is a tool that I can use myself on a daily basis to help me keep walking forward and without fear. And that's what it's about.
So how did EFT help you travel?
Well, because, you know, I'm just a normal person and I have my worries about money, or I have my concerns about where am I going to stay, and all of those, you know, they're not silly because they're real, but at the same time, they're just everyday things. And so if I got myself worked up because I was worried about where I was going to go next, or I didn't have anywhere to stay, or if I was running out of money, I would just do the tapping. And then somehow I had clarity to be able to think and figure it out without all that fear that is really debilitating most of the time.
So it's not. So we're not talking the EFT was a magic wand over your bank.
No, it's not a magic wand.
Your bank card.
No, sadly not. Yeah, sadly not.
It's a serious tool that helped you.
Yes.
Helped you think and see things.
Yes. Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know that I lost my partner this year, and truly, it's been a very devastating time. But I've used EFT to help me to move through a lot of that grief.
Right.
And you still go through it, right? It's not that you want to stop yourself from feeling, but it helps, or it has helped me to keep my head above water and to keep myself managing to be part of the world.
Sometimes that's just what we need, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Just to...
Yeah.
Okay, I can still breathe.
Yeah, that's it. And some days that's exactly, that was all it was. It was just like, overwhelm. Okay, let's just get through this day.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah.
So, I remember Deborah.
Yes.
Yeah. You two. Okay. So, the audience needs a little background on this one. I met Christine and Deborah at a. It was entrepreneur blog group. That's what it was. Entrepreneurs and blogging. Yes. That's what it was. And I offered up a door prize because I was one of the sponsors for the event. And I offered up a door prize, a free photo shoot.
Yep.
And Christine and Deborah won.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so when I showed up to do the photo shoot, I was like, oh.
Yeah.
I didn't realize you two were partners, and I was like, oh, this is going to be cool, because I had never done a same-sex couple. Never photographed a same-sex couple, and I was like, okay, is this going to be any different or whatever? All these things are going through your head, and I was like, and when we finally got down to doing it, you guys were just so much fun, so full of love.
Thank you.
And when I went to edit the whole thing, because that's like the easy part is going and snapping pictures. The hard part is actually going and editing. It's like when I went to edit the whole thing, it was like you just see it between the two of you in your eyes. It's like. Yeah. It's one of the things I love about photography is when you look at people, look into the subject's eyes. Interestingly enough, it doesn't matter if it's a person or what the species is. Mm. When you can see into their eyes, that makes the great photograph.
Yeah.
And I have to say that you guys really helped me produce something that was really great for
you.
It
was really
good. Shoot.
It was a great afternoon.
So, and when I heard that that Deborah had passed on, I was like, oh, it was a bit of a shock. So, with all that, how has the EFT helped you with your grief process?
Well. You know, grief is it's an ongoing thing. It doesn't sort of stop. You know, every day is a challenge when you've lost somebody that you genuinely cared for. Or it can even be somebody who you've lived your whole life with, and even if you didn't care for them, you know, it's still somebody that's there, all right? And so, you know, every day has been a different day, and some days are better than others. And so I would just sit and tap on the sorrow, you know, even though I feel so sad, because there's a protocol. So we start off by saying, even though I feel so sad, I deeply and profoundly accept who I am and how I feel about that. And so it's really just about dealing with the emotion and the physical response, right? So sometimes, you know, if you just want to sit and cry, well, you can't do it every day, right? So, you know, it's like, even though I have this sorrow and I feel so devastated and I can hardly get out of bed, right? So we just deal with whatever is presenting itself in the moment. And so every day is different. And it just helps to keep figuring it out and keep working on it.
You're tuned in to the Community Living Show here on the National Campus and Radio Association Networks. We're going to come back with the interview in just a moment here. And, so we're going to come right back. I'm, of course, Kelly Rayburn on the controls, so we will be back in just a moment. The Global Accessibility Awareness Day is on the third Thursday of May of each year. The community and campus stations across Canada are hosting exclusive radio about accessibility, self-advocacy, adaptive technology, and more. For more information, contact your local stations about the National Access Day.
Hey there. This ad caught your attention. It also caught the attention of the coolest people from Squamish to Bellingham, music fans, students, and members of various cultural communities. If you want your ad to do the same, advertise with CITR and Discorder. If you've got a rad new ad or just something you want to share, whether in print, on air, or online, promote your wares, services, or events with us. Contact us at advertising@citr.ca or call 604-822-4342. Visit citr.ca for rates, information, and packages. This is the end of our ad, and if you're still here, we must be doing something right.
To understand more about fashion, we asked CITR student executive and fashion expert Jonathan Q what fashion means to him.
Like, it's just aesthetically something that's so ostentatious. Typically. I mean, because of course, I mean, it's also, you know, I mean, when you say fashion, I think people are talking explicitly about consumerism, as opposed to someone who buys, like, you know, let's say, you know, someone buys a
If you really want to know more about fashion, come on down to CITR in the Student Union Building of UBC and pick up some of our merchandise à la mode. Nous avons t-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, and coffee mugs.
But it's also very aesthetically gripping.
To keep you styling in support of the station you love. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Cool. Well, actually, is it? Because, I mean, you know, I was going to say because of the cultural vacuum that we exist within, but then, you know, really, fashion today is kind of derived from the European idea of couture, and that's been around for centuries.
Welcome back to the Community Living Show on the National Campus and Radio Association Networks. I'm Kelly, and we're doing the interview with Michael and our special guest, Christina Amelia Hayes. So we're going to go get back to the interview right now.
That's good advice, no matter who you are or what you're trying to do. It's like, because grief is most people don't really understand. They only think of grief should only happen in this case, Deborah passing. Yeah. But there's other situations where where grief happens.
Yeah.
And you have to go through that process.
Yeah, it can be any loss, and that can be the loss of your health, your loss of your, you know, aging. I was thinking about that the other night. I was just speaking to somebody who's getting on, and they feel pretty devastated because they're not able to do what they always have done. So that's a loss. And the same with, it can be the loss of a family member or a pet. You know, people devastation if they've had a pet, you know, whether it's a cat or a dog or even a mouse, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You've got to bond with that.
Yeah.
So grieving is it takes time.
Yeah. I hear stories from people that have chronic pain and or fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue syndrome, and they all talk about, I used to be able to do that, and now it took it from me.
I said to them,
but you have to understand, you're grieving over the loss of the, and they're like, no, that's not grief. Grief is, it can only be this, and it's like, and you try to make people see that when anything's taken from you.
Well, I think with the work that I do and what I've seen is very often it's about understanding, and once the, you know, the light goes on, then you can deal with it in a different way. But there's resistance, but, you know, people. The wonderful thing about the EFT, what I have found, is that there is more than one way. And so we can work by talking it through. But I discovered quite early on that there are people out there that I call head cases, and that's in the nicest possible way, right? There are people who overthink things. And so it's easier to work in a different way, so they don't have to think. And so I've found that working with colour and feeling, so in other words, if you say, okay, Michael, where is the pain today? And you can say, well, the pain's in my elbow. And you'll say, okay, have a look, what colour is it?
Right.
And you'll say, oh, it's bright red. And I'll say, great, how does it feel? And you'll say, well, it feels hot. or cold, doesn't matter. So then when we do the EFT, we say, even though I have this bright red elbow that's hot, and then we work with that until we get it down to a point where it's nothing. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like that's way too easy, but that's just it.
That would be overthinking again, wouldn't it?
It is overthinking, yes.
Yeah. You're making a lot of sense with that. So what makes you so special at doing this?
Oh, wow. Okay, well, I've been doing it a long time, and I have had a lot of experience. I worked in some pretty cool places. I've lived and worked in Hong Kong. I've lived and worked in England, and I've lived and worked here now in Canada. Mm-hmm. And I've traveled and, you know, done the tapping in other places. So I've had a lot of experience with different thinking. I've even worked in Thailand and the Maldives as a guest in some of these luxury spa places. That's been pretty special. But I've worked with the girls, so I've worked with, like, young Filipino girls that are working in some of these centres, and I've, you know, worked with some very top professional people too. And everybody has their own, what you can say, agenda. They have their own way of thinking. And so I guess my experience of working with people for the most part of my life has given me that ability to think slightly differently and also see things differently. And I'm pretty good at trying to find a positive way of looking at situations. So all round, I think that my life experience helps to bring, something that's quite unique.
Yeah. Okay, not to sound like an absolute downer, but there's so many people out there that they have trouble seeing the upside.
Yes.
All they see is the loss, and they can't see the upside. How do you get people to flip it?
Well, it isn't a one session shot, okay? But what we're doing is initially we're clearing. So when we start, let's just say about your, I'm talking about your elbow. You haven't even got a bad elbow, but I'm using that as an example. So if we worked with that. So what we do is, like, even though I have this sore elbow that's absolutely killing me, and we talk about what it is, and then what we do, something called reframing. So, but we have to get it down first, and then we reframe, and we take the problem and we make it a positive. So what could I say there? It's like, even though I have this sore elbow, and it really has been causing me a lot of trouble, I'm open to the possibility that it's able to correct itself beautifully. Mm-hmm. My body has an innate wisdom that allows it to self-heal. So we just use really positive statements, and also we can say, you know, we can use analogies. So in other words, I could say to you that the pain is melting away like an ice cube in the sun.
Oh, okay.
And that's a visual. Mm-hmm. But if you're a visual kind of person, but it's also you can actually, oh yeah, I get that. I can really feel that it's just melting away. And the power of the mind is incredible, because it works.
Yeah. I heard this one time, and you can tell me how it fits in, that if the skin is the largest organ on our body, the brain is the most powerful.
Well, now, here's an interesting thought, okay, because they've done tests at the Heart Math Institute that showed that the heart can actually anticipate what's coming.
Well, that's interesting.
Hey, isn't it?
Wow.
Yeah, so by they attach, you know, sort of things onto you to show that, you know, what it, where it is in the body that's actually picking up this information. And yeah, the heart is just as powerful, if not more powerful, than the brain. They're learning, I mean, science is catching up, right? Mm-hmm. So there's some really incredible... that's why I love YouTube, right? Because you can find all these things on there. Great resource for research.
I like how you say science is catching up. Science was being a former chemical engineer, yes. and in the sciences. But science was never designed to tell us what is. It was designed to tell us what isn't.
Ah, okay.
It's the answer. Yeah. It's the answer. The question. Well, it's not that. So it could be any of these other things. So it's just a limitation of possibilities. Yes. But that doesn't mean that that science is the limitation. It's what's outside of science. Yes. Yeah. And that's pretty infinite.
Wow.
So. It was one of the really cool things. I had some pretty cool instructors in science that they said, no, you're not looking for the answer. You're looking to see what the answer isn't.
Right.
Now go back and try again.
Huh.
And it totally changes your way of thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Huh.
So science is saying, hey, there's more and more of this stuff going on. It's like, I like how energy is connected, you know?
Yeah.
So with what you're doing, you're helping people channel the energy in a positive way.
Yes. I suppose you could say it like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I had a young girl the other day who was, dealing with issues at work, where she felt challenged and misunderstood. And, you know, by the end of the session, she had a different way of thinking about it. So we're not only releasing the tension and the stress, we're also giving positive affirmations, and also, I guess, really inviting them to think in a different way. So it doesn't matter, you know, one lovely guy that I was working with, he having some really traumatic stress in his life, and he loved music, and we got to he explained to me that his favorite was Leonard Bernstein, and Leonard Bernstein had orchestrated without using his hands.
Okay. Yeah.
So he was using his nodding of his head and his eyes to get the orchestra to do what they needed to do. So we built into his tapping that he could be Leonard Bernstein-like. Because that meant he didn't have to use his voice or his, you know, his volatile nature to express himself. Well, he said to me more than once, it changed his life, because he found that he didn't have to be, because he had real struggle with not replying instantly. It was like, you know, he was addicted to his Twitter account and his all of these different accounts. So he started to be much more able to separate it and to be rational and to understand that he did not have to use anger and and be, you know, what can I say, it's not nasty, but most of it was anger, to get what he wanted. It's quite interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just a different way of looking at it.
Yes, yeah. And it's just, and it just by introducing something that was already his, you know, something that he mm-hmm. he loved. But that's the key, is finding something. The more you work with a client, the better you get to know them, and the more you can say, I don't want to say doctor, but you can gear the session towards exactly who they are and exactly what it is that will work for them. And I think that's what makes the difference with a good practitioner. Yeah, yeah. Because you can do this on your own, and it, you can be very successful. I love when I can teach somebody how to do it, and they actually do it, because on a daily basis you can most definitely take down, you know, sort of slightly difficult situations. But when you're doing this, you know, really, what can you say, deep diving, it's better to have somebody who's a professional and who's really
a guide.
Yeah, good at yeah. what they do, like anything, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Like anything.
Yeah. Yeah, because I imagine that, that if you took a deep dive like that, you could get lost in yourself and
go very differently. You probably, but here's the thing: is what I've experienced is you might have some tears, right? You can, the grief. If there's grief underneath, then you know, better out than in, right? That's what the saying is, right? So you know, when you're doing the tapping, you may have a little cry, and you might feel, you know, a little bit emotional, but it soon passes.
Yeah,
and so. It's not that you can't do it, and I really, you know, advocate that people do self-tapping, but to get to the nitty-gritty, you do need help.
Yeah. What was the toughest, or say the most difficult person that you find?
Oh, well, you can't really talk about people in the unless you have their permission, so...
Well, no names.
No. But and I think that's another important thing that people need to know, is the confidentiality is important. Mm-hmm. And but no names, the most difficult. Well, I as I say, that there are people who with head cases, right, mm-hmm. that do struggle, and when somebody has all the answers, because you'd be tapping and they interrupt you and say but
and okay then, yeah? Yeah,
and then it's like, okay, you have to and it stops the flow, and then you have to start again. And but when you get a result, that person is so amazed and so grateful that they'll still keep doing it. They'll still find ways of interrupting you, but it's on the whole, it's, you know, it's they know they're getting somewhere. Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, the challenge is getting them to trust you and to also hear you.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. I've never done EFT,
yeah.
but I have gone through through other methods of counseling,
yeah.
and things like that, either for relationships, mm-hmm. or traumas that have happened to me. The when you first go in there, as the person who's being helped, you go in there, you're like, oh, I don't know this person, and
so
you get all worked up, you know. Most people don't realize this out of me, because I try to hide it really well, but I get anxious about meeting new people.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, am I going to do this right? Or am I going to flub it? That sort of thing, right? So it's the same thing with when I go to somebody for help with a problem. It's like, am I going to present a problem the right way? Or are they going to be able to help me? What's going to happen? I get all worked up inside. So how do you settle somebody down?
Well, I think it's really important to talk initially, and that's, again, experience, right? So I'm lucky because I've had a different and rather unusual life. So, you know, it doesn't take much for me to be able to talk about myself, right? So, but basically when a person comes along and let's say it's you, then we would just generally talk about whatever's going on. It doesn't have to be anything, just to get over that initial hurdle. Mm-hmm. And then you can almost see people settle down. So, from body language, right? And so once there is some kind of comfort there, and we can just start tapping on just finding a way of settling them down, and so that they see that it's not that hard and that they can do it and that they're going to get a result quite quickly. So, but that's the thing, is building up the rapport is just as important as the work that you do. Because if you don't do that building, then whatever you do, that person's not going to take it on board, or they're not going to be receptive to what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah? So the other person, it's like a gift then.
Yes. Well, it is, yeah.
You are offering and they receive.
Yeah.
This is the Community Living Show here on the National Campus and Radio Association Networks. Our two flagship stations, Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, and of course our Tuesday show on CITR 101.9 FM on the Vancouver side. We're going to go right back with the interview in just a few moments here with Christina Amelia Hayes, I should say. So, yeah, so we should be back in just a moment. The Global Accessibility Awareness Day is on the third Thursday of May of each year. The community and campus stations across Canada are hosting exclusive radio about accessibility, self-advocacy, adaptive technology, and more. For more information, contact your local stations about the National Access Day.
Your cell phone already has an FM receiver chip installed in it, but major Canadian telecommunication and mobile companies have blocked access to this free system to listen to the radio in favor of charging for data streaming. With access to the FM chip, your phone can still receive broadcasts and updates during an emergency, even if the cell towers are down. Visit freeradioonmyphone.ca to see how you can get involved by contacting your carrier and signing our petition.
Crimes and Treasons Radio, this is Riff Raff. Every Tuesday from 9 to 11 p.m. on 101.9 FM with Relly Rails and Jules Andre Brown.
You're again tuned in to the Community Living Show here on the National Campus and Radio Association Networks, the NCRA Radio Networks. We're talking to Christina Amelia Hayes on the interview. So, Michael, take it away for your final segment.
And I can see how you can be very relaxing to be around. Actually, yeah. You are relaxing to be around. Because every time I've visited you and Deborah that. I still can't believe she's gone.
No, I know.
Yeah.
She was so vital and full of life.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it's just the way things are.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, it's all right.
It's like you both were just so easy and relaxing to be around. And I remember that you guys also got me to try a couple of different things to deal with my back pain and things like that too. Mm. So, crystals or something.
Yeah,
like
Deborah, the crystal bed. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, we loved the biomat. Yeah, yeah. When we both were very into alternative therapies, and you know, I've been since 1987 is when I first started to do different stuff. And I was still working in the hotel, but I was still studying meditation, and I did Reiki and lots of other things. Mm-hmm. And so I'm an all-round therapist. I just loved EFT because it's quick and it's easy, and I can teach people how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean to say that there aren't other amazing things out there that are just as, you know, wonderful.
Yeah.
And that I use it for myself too.
Mm-hmm. So how does somebody find you to get you to help them?
Okay, well, I am in White Rock here in the beautiful BC, and I'm on Fridays. I'm down at Whitby's Books and Gifts on Friday afternoons from 12 till 6, and you can ring and make an appointment or look them up online, Whitby's Books and Gifts. And my own website is Christine Amala, and that's AmalaEFT.com. And there's more information on there, and you can book a session on there, or you can ring me.
So it's been a pleasure. Because we only live a couple blocks from each other.
That's right.
So we only just
discovered that.
So on this warm day, you managed to walk over to my house. We're recording from my house because the co-op radio studio is being moved.
Right.
And that's going to be fun. We're going to go back to it's our old studio, but it's a new studio.
Right.
So it's been completely renovated and everything over there. And White Rock is a bit of a commute to UBC.
UBC, yeah, that's right. And this was way easier. Thank you.
Yeah, so this worked out pretty well.
Yeah.
So thank you again, Dave. Thank you again, Christine.
You're welcome, Michael. And thank you very much for having me and inviting me to do this.
All right.
It's really exciting.
That was Michael interviewing Christina Amalia Hayes, the Emotional Freedom Practitioner. If you have a story idea for us, please let us know. Our email address is communitylivingradio@gmail.com. That, once again, is communitylivingradio, all in one word, @gmail.com. Or you can reach us on Facebook and on Twitter. Our Facebook address is facebook.com/groups/CLivingRadio. And our Twitter account is @CLivingRadio. For the next few minutes, I'm going to play you some interviews with the name of Andrea Palmer, who is an autism trigger. So I'll leave you with that in the closing. And I will come right back with with our goodbyes and stuff. Again, you're tuned into the Community Living Show. My name is Kelly Rayburn on the controls.
Andrea Palmer is an entrepreneur, an autism health advocate, and these are her own words, exponential tech geek based in Vancouver, BC. She is the founder and CEO of Awake Labs, an autism health company committed to empowering those living on the autism spectrum. Andrea is also a World Economics Forum global shaper in the Vancouver hub. She's an entrepreneur motivated by social impact, quantified healthcare, and democratizing technology. So would you please welcome to the stage Andrea Palmer.
Hi everyone, as you heard, my name is Andrea Palmer. I'm currently based in Vancouver, but we're moving to Toronto. So soon we'll be working on both sides of the country to empower individuals living with autism. I'm going to start by telling you a little bit about myself, because that's how every great speaker starts, right? I'm just kidding, but I'm going to do it anyway. So I am an engineer. I studied robotics. Up until this point of starting this company, my biggest accomplishment was building autonomous soccer-playing robots and competing them around the world against other nerds from other countries. And then somehow I ended up working in the healthcare space, in the autism space, right after graduation from UBC. This is my business partner, Paul. He's a biomedical engineer. He's slightly cooler than I am. And together we're leading this company to change the way that individuals with autism navigate the world and how the world is aware and accepting of them. So to start, I'm going to say a little bit about the technology that's changing healthcare right now. We heard a few things already. One of the things about wearables changing the healthcare space, I want to expand that a little bit and say wearables, implantables, edibles, these are all things that kind of go hand in hand but sound kind of crazy. I have some examples, but one I forgot to put on the slides is the Waterloo-based Thalmic Labs. Have any of you heard of Thalmic Labs before? No? So they, oh, in the back, great. So they started out building just really cool technology that they wanted to change the way you interacted with your computer or with your TV. And so they have this arm-based device that you can turn your hand and it recognizes your muscle movements, or you can make gestures with your fingers and it understands what you're doing. And really their first application was changing the volume or changing the song. But recently they have been using this as a brain computer interface. So helping people with amputations or who are missing limbs interface with their prosthetic limbs through their muscles, the remaining muscles in their arms, in order to help them or empower them to navigate the world and be more independent. So it started off as this thing that was like, yeah, change the volume, great, and became this like amazing project. And they recently just raised $120 million in their Series B. They're 3 years old. This company is 3 years old. They raised $120 million, which I think is the largest Series B round in any startup in Canada. So that's one company that's definitely growing, and they're based right here in Ontario. Another one in what city are we in? Ottawa. is the iBionics. They're the creators of the Diamond Eye. I think this company is only a year old, and they were just named the most innovative startup by Startup Canada. And they're creating an implantable chip to go into your eyeball, and it helps people who are born with sight and have since lost their sight as their retina degenerates. And this helps restore their sight as they grow older. How crazy is that? They're putting like a little chip that has diamonds in it in your eye and it helps people see. Okay, and two other companies. So Newton here is based in Toronto as well. They are using the Pebble smartwatch to help monitor epileptic seizures. And Empatica on the other side, they're based in Boston. They're doing a similar thing, but they created their own device. This is the Proteus Digital Health. This is an edible system that's changing healthcare. So they create these little pills that are essentially little robot sensor things, and you swallow it, and it's to improve medication compliance. So if you send someone home with a prescription, to be sure that they're actually taking their prescription, you give them this system, you put it the medication in the pill, and they wear the patch, and it will tell you if they've actually swallowed that pill. Crazy. And this is Docto. They're based in Vancouver, and they're using a Fitbit and a glucose monitor to predict, for type 1 diabetes, to predict moments of hypoglycemia. And just, it's a completely autonomous system, but it will notify you if you need to eat sugar. And then something super crazy, there's companies, multiple companies, this is just one of them, that's looking at aging as a disease and trying to figure out how we can cure aging so we can live forever. But these are also the crazy people who are planning on sending robots to asteroids to mine them to bring back resources for Earth, so we'll just write them off as crazy. I'm just kidding, they're really cool. Okay, so how many of you know someone who is on the autism spectrum? Yeah, quite a few. So I'm just going to tell you a little bit about autism. You probably have heard it before, but right now, 1 in 68 children in North America have an autism spectrum disorder. 85% of these individuals will require continued support throughout their entire lives. And that support really varies. It's anything from full-time, 24/7 caregivers to seeing a psychologist or a behaviorist once a week throughout their lives. But this is a huge number, and we really need to do more earlier on to increase independence. 90% of adults on the autism spectrum are unemployed or underemployed. because so many workplaces are just not set up for them. So this week I'm attending the Geneva Center for Autism Symposium in Toronto, and in our little gift bag they handed out brochures, and one of them was for a chair for classrooms. And this, I never thought of it before. I think about this all the time, and I had never thought of this. This chair has tennis balls on the feet, or essentially, it's a little bit more elaborate than that. But the idea of the chair in the classroom, have you ever, you know, been sitting the linoleum tile and someone pulls the chair back and it's really, really loud? Well, with the additional sensory challenges that come with autism, that chair being pulled back can cause anxiety that means that individual will no longer be able to focus in the classroom. So this chair with tennis balls on it will reduce the noise so autistic individuals in classrooms can focus on their learning even more, reduce one of the sensory challenges that happen in the classroom. Autism in Canada is, we have one of the best systems, I would say, for supporting autistic families. But it really varies across the country, and there's no national strategy. So as I was, as I have been looking up, autism policies in various provinces, I found that the last time the federal government looked at this was in 2006. And in 2006, the rate of diagnosis was 1 in 166, and right now it's 1 in 68, so that's a pretty big difference. And Senator Jim Munson, whose name I spelt completely wrong here, so forgive me. It's with an O, not an E, fun fact. He said that, I really like this quote because I really like it, but it's also very hard or difficult. It says, autism is an equal opportunity neurodevelopmental disorder. So it doesn't just affect, it's not a partisan disorder, but it's something that we all need to focus on and come up with a strategy together across the country. In Canada, families with one child on the autism spectrum will spend between $60,000 and $80,000 each year. And when you look at the median income rate, for a family in Canada, it's $75,000 a year. So these numbers don't really add up when you consider all the other costs that also go into existing on Earth. And many times, especially for families who have more than one child on the autism spectrum, they are forced to move across the country to BC or Alberta or provinces who have more autism support. But in BC, for example, the provincial government gives $22,000 each year to a child under the age of six. As soon as they turn six, that number goes to $6,000 each year per child to help with therapy, for technology, things like that. But the average age for diagnosis in BC is 6.5. And so right away, you know, we're missing out. In Ontario, the average age for diagnosis is about 4. And the provincial government supports programs called IBI therapy. It's a type of behavior therapy up to the age of 5 in the province. But there's a 2-year wait list. So if the average age for diagnosis is 4 and there's a 2-year wait list, oftentimes, as soon as a child is diagnosed, it's too late, or they get, you know, 5 months of support. And so this is where, here's another number. Can you see that? Here's bigger. In the United States, the UC Davis just did a study that said $268 billion is spent each year on direct medical, direct non-medical, so that's therapy, speech pathologies, and indirect lost productivity costs of managing autism. This is 1 year for one disease in the United States, in one country, $268 billion. It's mind-blowing.
And we're going to have to leave it there. That was Andrea Palmer, the autism trigger, on the interview. And before that, we talked to Christina Amelia Hayes on the Emotional Freedom Practitioner. Thank you very much to both of our guests. Thank you very much to Michael. Hope to hear from you next week, because next week will be my final week before the month of August off. So until then, this has been the Community Living Show with myself and Michael. So thank you very much for tuning in, and stay tuned for upcoming shows that are on the NCAA Radio Networks.